Welcome back to episode 140 of Chess Journeys, Tales of Adult Improvement. Here on Chess Journeys, we love to talk about ratings gains, but we also talk about the more realistic plateaus and even sometimes the pits of despair below that. If you want to support the show, you can go to Patreon Chess Journeys. I want to thank our queen level supporters, Blundergoat, Tim Everett, Scott D4B6 Joe, Matt Bush, Jay Garrison, Donna Rich Burgess, Brandon Hallside, Jeff Peterson, Tobias Rex, Bob Berger, Nicholas Harrigan, Rich, Bradley Fenner, Fletcher Ray, Nathan Peterson, Christian Glaw, and King level supporter, Ian Samples. If you want to appear on the show, fill out the Google form in the show notes. We do all want to hear your story. You can also DM me on Twitter. That's a great way. And if you're interested in getting better at chess, Noel Studer has his next level training program, and he also has his brand new program geared for beginners. You can get a code for the show notes to help support the show and get better at chess. I've also been streaming calculation puzzles lately from the chess gym quite a bit. I really enjoyed it myself. If you're interested to join the gym or even get a free preview, there's a link for that in the show notes. So there's lots of ways to support the show now. And now we're on to the main events. We bring in Spencer this week. He's an adult improver, a chess teacher, and president of the Richmond Chess Club. Spencer, how you doing? Welcome to the show. And have you had a chance to play any chess yet today?
How's it going? I'm doing great. I did not play any chess today, unless you count. I am playing a correspondence game, so I played like about two or three moves, maybe. So it's going great so far. I'm on move three, and I'm still doing all right. Did play a bunch yesterday. We have our, you know, I play way more over the board than I do online, and it's because I'm just really lucky to have a scene where we meet officially three times a week, Monday, Thursday, and Saturday, but realistically, if you also count like other meetups, I'm probably playing over the board like five nights a week. It's really awesome, but yeah,
okay. I'm jealous.
Yeah, we're pretty spoiled out here.
That sounds amazing. All right, well, you said you're playing a correspondence game. Like, is this a daily or is this like a legit like rated correspondence game?
No, just a daily with okay. A friend, a former student actually. Yeah.
Okay.
I think he, but yeah.
All right. Are you a big fan of daily games?
I mean, I actually never really initiate them, but I have a handful of people that's like the only way they ever really want to play, and they just hit me. I never say no to a game, but it's, you know, I'm definitely way, way, way more a blitz person than anything slow.
Yeah. For whatever reason, I haven't enjoyed dailies, and I always feel bad. People try to get dailies with me and I decline them all. So if you're someone who's like, boy, that Dr. Skull's a real jerk, he declined my game, I declined every game. So there we go. Now you know.
Yeah, send me a blitz game instead, then we'll talk.
Yeah, I'm free for that. All right, well, let's start by going back in time. Did you play at all as a kid? Did you just pick up chess for the first time as an adult? When did you start chess?
Yeah, so I kind of have a little bit of experience in both the, you know, the typical adult improver, but also I was a chess kid. But yeah, I learned when I was six. I could beat my dad when I was like maybe eight, started going to tournaments from nine until like 12, like very, you know, every other weekend kind of thing. You know, I was taking lessons. And then I quit when I was 12, because I didn't think girls would like me or something. So I decided to become a band kid instead, which that's a way better idea.
Wait, like a cool band, like your own band, or like you picked up like the
trombone? Like marching bands. Like,
oh, I got bad news for you, Spencer. I don't think that's where the cool kids go either.
Look, we had a lot of fun. And I played saxophone. So I was,
ooh, okay.
Not like I was, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
But anyway, so yeah, I quit when I was 12. I think I had just hit like 15, 30 or so USCF. And I was, there wasn't really anyone at my school or in my area that was that good. Like all my friends that were good lived, you know, an hour away.
Yeah.
And so I just didn't play at all until I was about 19 or 20 when I moved to Richmond and started going to college here. And the club that I now run was already pretty much existing, but it was just like way, way smaller. It was like one dude running it, and yeah, and I just kind of fell back in love with the game now that I finally had people to play with. And yeah, and it was cool. I definitely had to refresh myself. I was definitely losing to people back when I like restarted it.
Yeah.
That I would like never lose to today, but it's, yeah, I mean, it took me a minute to get the wheels turning again, but
okay.
And that same year I also got back into chess via, I was working for my school. The psychology department was doing a study on, does chess make or enhance executive function, which is like long-term decision-making or something. I don't know. I personally, I didn't really care about the study, cause I was just like, is chess good for kids? I mean, yeah, like you don't need to do a whole thing on it, but okay, whatever. And so I would go out to a couple schools and, you know, teach. It was very rigid. It was very like, I wasn't allowed to teach past what the curriculum said, or else it would like mess up the study. And I'm not going to lie, I mean, if a kid asks me a chess question, I'm not going to like not answer it. Yeah. So
I'm sorry that it's outside the scope of this study. You're on your own, kid.
Yeah, like sorry, you're not supposed to know what forks are yet, so I can't confirm or deny whether that is a fork yet. Like, come on. Yeah. And then it was cool because at the very end of it we did like a little tournament where it was like the school that I taught versus a school that somebody else taught. Yeah. And it was cool. It was a little sports movie, and my team crushed it. And that's when they started like, you taught them more stuff, didn't you? I was like, yeah.
Ruined the study.
Yeah. Throw the whole thing away.
What are you going to do? All right. I think we have this unique opportunity to like peer into the mind of the middle school chess player. Then, do you remember much from those days as a middle school tournament player?
Yeah. It was really like more so like fourth and fifth grade for me. Maybe like one tournament in sixth grade, but yeah. There was the regular crew of kids that were like good. And so we saw each other at all the same tournaments, and we were usually playing up, and like, instead of K to five, we would be in like the K to eight or the K to 12 just to get, you know, more potential rating and stuff. But yeah. And usually, so when I say I took lessons, it wasn't like one-on-one. It was actually, there was this master guy and he had a son that was exactly my age. So we were like rivals and friends and stuff. Nice. And so it was like a group lesson for like, you know, five or six of us kids that were all roughly the same level. And he would, you know, show us, you know, Capablanca, Marshall. And I don't really remember that much, if I'm being honest, but I'm sure I learned a lot.
Yeah, that's cool. So it was mostly the Scholastic scene.
Yeah, I didn't do, I never played any games against an adult.
That's too bad.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not really sure why. I guess my parents just, I think a lot of parents, they want their kids to play other kids. Like, they just like naturally are like, oh yeah, they can make more friends. I don't want them playing sweaty adults and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think they falsely think that, oh, well, my kid, if he's playing against adults, you know, he's probably going to lose a lot. Adults are smart. Yeah. And it's like, no, actually, you definitely want them playing adults.
Yeah.
I've had a few recent tournaments where like my first three or four rounds are against just 11-year-olds that are cracked out of their mind and like super underrated. And then my final round, I get to play like some like 50-year-old walks in. I'm just like relieved. I'm like, thank you. I don't want to play these kids anymore.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I hear you. The kids, I don't mind that the kids are good. I think that's totally fine. It's frustrating that the rating system is so slow to reflect their progress. That's the frustrating part.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what are we going to do?
It's only going to get worse, probably. That's the good news. Yeah.
I have some ideas for fixes to the rating system, but I'm also not a mathematician, so I think they're pretty pointless. So I won't even talk about them. What's the point? All right. Well, that's interesting. So you played a lot of Scholastic. I kind of feel the same way with my own child. It's like, I like taking her to Scholastic events better. I just feel like she has a chance to make some chess friends there. And
yeah,
you know, she's not intimidated by adults, but I think she just has more fun in like a crazy environment with like 1,000 little kids rather than, you know, a bunch of super serious adults.
Yeah, and I think especially when it comes to kids, like the fun aspect and the, you know, trying to make it like a lifelong pursuit and, you know, inspire that kind of thing. That's more important that right now than like her getting good. Cause like that can happen whenever it's, you know, what's the point of having a kid, you know, get really good and then they quit forever. And then it's like, all right, well,
Do you have any regrets? You were a 12-year-old, you were at 1500. Like, it seems like you've got a trajectory to at least be master. Any regrets there?
Yes. I mean, no doubt about it. So I went towards, you know, the band route, music and all that, went to college for music and ultimately, but during that I was like starting to get back into chess and I realized, wow, I just like chess so much more than music. And I mean, it's not like I could have gone to college for chess, but you know what I mean? I definitely regret not sticking with it. Cause anytime I lose to, you know, someone that I feel like I should be beating, I'm just like, if I would have stuck with chess, I wouldn't even have to be talking to you right now. But yeah.
Yeah. Can you actually feel like you learn chess slower now that you're older, or did it just like happen so naturally as a kid that you can't even reflect on the process of how you learned?
That's a good question. I feel like I was a pretty quick learner as a kid, but I didn't have, I think the difference between like me now and me then is I might've actually been a little bit better at focusing and like calculating back then, but I didn't have as much experience with like recognizing like tactical patterns and stuff. And I wasn't very confident with, you know, sacrificing material and just being okay with that. Like I was kind of the opposite of how usually you think of like kids are crazier and tactical and all that. And then as you get older, you get more boring and positional and stuff. But I was like kind of the opposite. I was like really scared to risk anything. And and now I'm like the total opposite. Now I just, if I'm up a pawn, I'm uncomfortable because I play so many gambits. I'm like, if I'm up a pawn, I'm like, something's wrong. This is,
this game didn't go how it's supposed to go.
Yeah. What is happening?
And I'm the reverse. If I get up a pawn, I'm like, so I won? And they're like, no, that's called a gambit. And I'm like, that's called Kevin wins.
Yeah.
Doesn't always happen. Well, but that's how I feel.
Well, so my whole philosophy on gambits is like, if you're assuming you're under like 2000 and you're not playing masters.
Yeah.
I would say 90 to 95% of every single game I play at my, you know, online, I'm like 1700 blitz. Every single game, someone is going to hang a piece, whether it's me or my opponent. At some point, someone's going to hang a piece. So why should I care if I'm up or down a pawn?
Okay.
If I know that at some point someone's going to hang a piece. So I'm just like, yeah, why not just like play fun gambits, get, you know, fun attacking positions. Especially might be a little specific towards blitz, which is all I play, but you know, cause there it's like, you get the extra advantage of just having an attack, even if it's a bogus attack, it's still,
can be hard to defend in blitz.
Pressure on and
yeah, for sure. I've been posting a few things on Twitter lately of like terrible blitz games I play where like my opponent hangs a queen on move 12 and then the computer's like 85% accuracy, and I'm like, what, how is that 85% accuracy? What is happening here?
No, you could not pay me to care about chess.com accuracy stuff. Like, Kramnik.
I was trying to care. I was like, look, I'm getting better. Some of my accuracies are in the 90%. Look how good at chess I am. And then I started really thinking about it. I was like, I think this is just a marketing tool at this point.
Yeah. Well, I think most people just don't understand that when your opponent plays really badly, it's super easy to get a good accuracy. Like, they hang their queen and you took it. Good job. Like 100%. They're like, I don't know.
Yeah. You played like a 2000 that game. Every 2000 I know takes hanging queens.
Yeah.
You're like, all right, cool. Thanks, man.
But also, to be fair, 2000s, they do be hanging queens. It's just a...
Yeah.
I always tell new people at our club, like, hey, look, don't worry. Like, we're all the same. We all blunder. It's just a matter of like the rate at which you blunder. Like, you're going to blunder 10 times a game. I might blunder once or twice. That's the only difference. I will blunder though. Like, we will do it.
Yeah, that is a fact of blitz chess for sure. Okay. Do you remember at all? Like, it sounds like when you were a kid, you were taking these group lessons. Did you like study chess, or were you just kind of like, I've got my group lesson, I've got my friends, I play chess, that's how I get good at chess?
Yeah, I can't say I was like super serious with it. I did have, I think, a book with like a book of like Morphe games that I remember reading a lot. And yeah, like I mean, my coach, he would like give us homework and stuff, and it'd be, you know, a bunch of puzzles that I would sometimes do. But yeah, I mean, I played a little bit on ICC, the only the ancient ones know about that. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say I ever had like that great of a work ethic. I think it was mostly just getting good through, yeah, hanging out and just being around my friends that were also good players and
Nice.
the tournaments and stuff. Yeah.
Cool. So I guess let's talk about today then. So you pick up, well, I guess not all the way today, but you pick chess back up again. You said when you were in college, how'd that go? Did you jump in, like, were you very quickly about the same rating, or was it kind of like a steep curve to get back to where you were?
It took a few months for sure to get back to like, you know, where I thought was like a reasonable level. But I think overall, I mean, the people I jumped in with were, you know, pretty solid veterans that have been playing locally for 20, 30 years. And yeah, it took me a minute to get the wheels back rolling, but it was eventually, you know, I mean, I also like totally revamped all my openings. Like, I don't think I play anything that I used to play as a kid anymore. So I had to like you know, learn everything because, you know, my kid repertoire was all like kid stuff, four knights and like I don't know. I think I played the dragon because it sounds cool
That sounds
to a
cool.
girl, and there's still nothing wrong with the dragon, but yeah, no, I've completely switched to just all kinds of any gambit that isn't bad, I play.
Gotcha. All right, what's your favorite gambit then?
My favorite would have to be, I mean, the one I play the most and the one that I based my Twitter handle off of, Smith Moron. Yeah, I love the Mora for sure. But my favorite, which I almost never get to play because no one's ever greedy enough, is the Nachmanson Gambit.
Ooh, I don't know.
It's really, really crazy. So it usually I get there via the bishop's opening. So that's how I start. You know, e4, e5, bishop, c4. If they go knight f6, I play d4, which is like kind of like the, you know, the Danish gambit, but I included the bishop also. And then they get greedy and take both pawns. So they take, you know, e takes d4. I just play knight f3, develop again. A. Then if they throw in knight c6, I just castle. They take my other pawn on e4. I can play knight c3, which they can take with the pawn. And so
Wow.
I've given up two pawns and a knight.
Oh
And then
my.
I sacrifice my bishop on f7.
Oh,
I'm
jeez.
down two whole pieces and two pawns. I've never lost from that position because you win one piece back immediately with queen d5. And then you can get your rook on the open file against their king. And it's like, it's so sick.
It sounds like a Morphe game to me.
Yeah, no,
All
but
their
in chess,
pieces are on their starting squares, and all your pieces are active or sacrificed.
yeah, I don't think this opening existed in Morphy's time, but if he knew about it, he would have put on some highlights with it.
Yeah, he
Yeah,
would
for
have liked it.
those in chat, it's spelled Nakhmanson, I think. Nachmanson Gambit.
Right.
There's a good Jonathan Schrantz YouTube video from St. Louis Chess Club. Yeah.
Would you say you spend a lot of time working on your openings, or is this something where, like, you came back, you got repertoire, now you don't spend a lot of time on them?
A couple years ago, I definitely spent like way too much time on my openings, and I'm definitely a huge hypocrite when, because I always say I'm like, you don't need to study openings, especially if you're starting out. And I've flip-flopped on my philosophy there like a million times too. But no, I definitely did study recently. No, because I've pretty much been playing the same stuff for like 3 or 4 years. I got a pretty good hang of it, and I don't normally feel the need. Yeah, I mean, if I play a game and something goes wrong really early, yeah, I'll check it. But I can't. I'm not out here like buying chessable courses or anything. Yeah. I don't think it's necessary. I mean, I've met so many people that just are terrible in the opening, mm-hmm. and it doesn't because they're better than me, and so they win despite yeah. me, you know, not knowing what the French defense is.
Yeah, I right before we got on, I was playing a Catalan as white, and like very early on, my opponent played f6, and I was like, "What is happening? How that cannot be good," and I lost. And I was just like, "What?" So yeah, like you don't have to play great in the opening to win at chess. So, like it can work out.
No, sometimes it just straight up doesn't matter. Actually, yeah, I watched your video, your most recent YouTube video last night, the Aphantasia game where your opponent moved their knight like 6 times in a row in the opening, and you were like, why aren't I winning yet, you know? And I thought you played well. You kept saying like, oh, this was so bad. I was like, I would do all that stuff. Pretty much. I mean,
yeah. That was a funny game. I've reflected on that so many times of my like stories that I get locked into, where if you play terrible in the opening, I assume I should be able to beat you, and that's just not always how chess works.
Yeah, yeah.
So it works.
That can happen also a lot where when you have to transition from the like. So I had a pretty recent tournament. Well, it was like 2 months ago. I was round one. I was playing a national master, and I've only a master in a tournament like one other time. I got crushed, big surprise. But this game, I was actually like crushing this dude. It was gonna be like move 20 checkmate. I missed a mate in 4. And then I got way too creative, and I did some crazy sacrifice that it was still good. Yeah. I was still with, I just like, you know, I could have just mated the guy instead. And then I got to an end game where I'm good. And then I did something really stupid, lost a piece. Okay, now it's still just equal, though. But could not, and at any point in this game, I could have offered a draw. He would have said yes, like, for sure.
Yeah.
But I could not, like, switch my brain from the, you know, I'm winning, this is awesome, to the, okay, chill out, you need to draw. You need to just, like, and then I ended up losing because I kept pressing the entire, because I was like, no, I'm winning, And then,
right, yeah.
Like, the worst experience
that's ever. That's one of the hardest things to do in chess. I was talking, I think, last week. It feels like that would be a great chessable course or book called Switching Gears, right? And it's like figuring out when is that moment when like you were losing and you've just been defending and now you can push for the win and you have a little window, and if you miss it, then you're done. Or you were winning, but guess what? You misplayed a couple times and now it's even, and you got to acknowledge that. And I think you're right. That can be so hard to do.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the opposite, the one where you're losing and then all of a sudden you're winning, that's a lot easier because then you're just like happy and energetic. But when just the accepting that you threw away a win is that's hard.
I feel like it's harder for me to shift into winning mode, because once I get into defense mode, then I'm just kind of like, all right, we just got to hold on, man, just hold on. And I kind of like stop looking for the like brilliant counterattack. I'm just trying to put my pieces in reasonable spots that hold it together.
Yeah, it's I have a harder time going from like a winning position. I get like complacent sometimes, or sometimes I'll have a, you know, a winning really nice position, but I'll just like for no reason I'll just like keep attacking their king when I don't need to. I could just like consolidate and keep it chill. Yep. You know, I'll start kingside attack and then maybe even win a piece along the way, to which I'm like, okay, now I don't need to mate you. But no, I still need to mate you. I'm going to do it anyway. And then,
yeah, right. Because I got this cool attack. What am I going to stop? Yeah, come on.
I don't want to just win a piece. I want to end this thing. Yeah. That's a sign of my lack of chess maturity, I think.
Yeah, I think we all struggle with that. So I guess I'm hearing conflicting reports from you. I'm hearing that you mostly play Blitz, but now you're talking about like, I'm assuming, classical chess. Do you play a lot of classical chess, or are you mostly a Blitz guy?
I'm definitely mostly a Blitz guy. I've played probably less than 10 tournaments as an adult, which are mostly either classical or like rapid, but something around 25 to 45 minute games. But yeah, not a lot. And anytime we're out at the bar or at a park or anything, well, we're playing blitz. You know, 5 minute, 2 second increment or so.
Okay, that's cool. So yeah. I guess my question is, how do you transition then when you sit down at a classical game? Like, are you able to make that transition? Do you practice for them at all? Or are you just like blitzing out moves and your opponent's like, whoa, what is going on here?
Yeah, no, I do not transition very well. I definitely think if I had to play somebody my rating for $1 million and I got to choose the format, it would definitely be blitz because I, mm-hmm. yeah, it's not so much that I rush when I play. Like I'm not just like, blitz. I mean, sure, I'll blitz out my opening, but yeah. I think the fact that I only play or primarily play blitz, it has kind of hurt my like deep calculation abilities because you don't really do that in blitz. You just, it's you know, more intuition based. And so, yeah, playing too much blitz, I do think has kind of stunted my, deeper evaluation kind of stuff. I'm more of a, whatever, I'll just kind of wing it. This looks like it's good, so I'll do it and see what happens, whatever. You know, getting lazy, basically.
Do you feel like it helps you in other parts? Because it just seems like we are really at this interesting moment where historically all the best players were like, blitz ruins your chess. And now it seems like we have all these young players who are coming up who are like, what are you, nuts? All I do is play blitz and then, you know, study a little bit. So I don't know. What do you think? Does blitz help you in some ways while hurting you in others?
I don't really think blitz is that helpful, but I would never, like, for your overall chess, but I would never tell someone like to stop playing it or anything. I think, you know, if you're, you know, if improvement is your like real, you know, number one goal, then you should be playing slower games. Like pretty much everyone will tell you that. Yeah. Blitz, you know, playing blitz might make you better at blitz, and it, and I can see that there's some value in how it could maybe help with, you know, because there's time scrambles in classical games too. So yeah. It's not like, you know, it's better than not playing chess at all. Like if you enjoy it, just do it. But
yeah,
but yeah, no, I don't really think, you know, if I was like to seriously, you know, sit down and like, okay, I want to reach 2000 or whatever, I would probably, you know, take a little break from blitz, or at least not have it be like my primary thing that I do.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. So what have you done since coming back? It sounds like number one, you worked out an opening repertoire, which, you know, I think, I mean, as much as grandmasters say, don't worry about it, I think having a repertoire is useful for anyone. I mean, your repertoire gets deeper as you get farther along in your chess, but you worked on a repertoire. What else have you done?
Yeah, I do think having a repertoire is pretty nice, just in that I don't have to think about, you know, what I'm going to do for my first few moves. And I can feel confident that at least a decent percentage of the time I'm going to get something where, even if it's either good for me or it's maybe equal, but I know it better than my opponent for sure because I'm playing the same stuff. But I also, I mean, there's, you know, there's people like Hannah, who you interviewed from my club.
Mm-hmm.
She hates studying openings. Like she just doesn't want to do it at all. So I was like, okay, you should just play like B3 on move one and then like E6, B6 as black against everything. And you'll get the same stuff and you'll know it. And
yeah,
it's not like the most fighting way to play, but it works enough. And she's had some pretty good success with it. I think now she's trying to do, you know, put on the big girl pants and start playing like E4. But
ooh.
Yeah, I mean,
E4 is a scary place to be.
E4 is the most fun place to be. I mean,
yeah, a lot of stuff goes down in E4. A lot of stuff happens.
Yeah, it's true. It is. I mean, it's, I guess I'm just lucky and thankful that that's what I played as a kid. So I didn't, because if I was just learning chess today, I would probably be too intimidated and I would want to play like London or D4 or something. But I just like everything that I play in E4 too much to, I'm definitely never, ever switching that.
Yeah. I've always had the problem with D4, I mean of E4, of liking some of my openings and not liking others, because there's just so many things you have to know. I never really liked my response to the French or the Sicilian or the Caro Kann. It was like I loved playing the Roy Lopez and some other stuff, but there's just so many things you have to know. It must be great feeling like I like all the opening lines I've settled on. I kind of wish I had something like that.
Yeah, it took me some time, especially as an adult, to like really find stuff that resonated with me. But I guess I'll just quickly run through all of my solutions to that. So yeah, I'm playing the Smith Mora against the Sicilian. For the Caro Kann, there's actually a really, really good video by Gotham Chess. Search for Gotham Nemo Caro Kann, because it's him like teaching Nemo the Caro Kann, and he recommends, it's like a sideline in the tall variation, so you play the advance and then after bishop f5 h4 h5 he goes bishop g5 immediately, and it's a lot of, it is a lot of memory checking stuff, but it gets really, really fun. Like, the often you'll let them take, they'll have their queen on b6, you'll let them take on b2, you'll let them take your rook, and then you trap them, and then they take your other rook, so it's like two rooks for a queen. But it can get really, really, really wild. And the best for, yeah, pretty much any opening I played, the thing that I look for the most is I want my opponent to have natural looking moves that are actually bad, because they're gonna get played all the time. And so yeah, like in this Caro Kann variation, like the natural things that almost like 95% of people do are not the best moves. And so that really appeals to me.
Yeah, it feels like that'd be especially powerful in Blitz, because if you're going on intuition, you're just going to make the natural move.
Yeah, no, I got every Caro Kann player in Richmond hating me for but that's
Nice.
the thing, when you can make someone like switch off of their opening, they're like, nah, I'm not playing this against you anymore.
Wow, that's a big win.
Yeah.
Well, now I want to play you because I'm a Caro Kann player. I want to see this game. I want to get cooked by it. Let's see it.
Yeah, I'm down. I'm
All right,
down.
we're pausing the podcast and we're going to play some Caro Kann games. All right,
Yeah.
we're back and I won every time. Wow, that
That was pretty messed up, dude.
was wild.
Pretty messed up.
Oh man, no, I do look forward to playing you. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
Okay. So what about the French? That's the big mystery for me. I can never crack the French.
Yeah, this one I am going with the Chess Dojo recommendation, or I think it is at least. It's the advanced variation, and it's, what is it called? The Milner-Barry Gambit. Yeah. Though I think I play it like the normal way, or like the conventional way, and they have like some other recommendation maybe. But that was the opening that I had against the master that I almost won. So it's, yeah,
Okay, so it's
and
legit.
it yeah and that one, I mean, I lost, but it was not the opening's fault. It gave me everything on a silver platter, and it was,
That's amazing. Okay. So you've done some opening work. You're confident. You're feeling good. Have you done much tactical work?
no, I think my resolution for this year, my chess resolution, is just to go hard on end games, because that's something I have to do. I mean, I don't think my end games are like particularly terrible, but they can always be so much better. And I think that, even just having like the confidence in your end games can make your middle game so much better, because you can just know that, like, all right, I don't need to checkmate you right now. I just know this is a good end game. But when you're not sure, then it gets scarier. I've had, like, I remember I had, I think you interviewed Sam from Baltimore. I had a game for, I think it was like her first tournament ever, actually. And we got to an end game, or almost to an end game, where I would have been a pawn up, but it was like a minor piece end game. And so I was really scared that, like, oh, it's going to be a draw. So, I didn't have the, and then we were looking at it with Jesse Cry afterwards, and he was like, yeah, dude, just trade down and you win. But I ended up actually screwing up. She should have won, but then she took a repetition, and I was like, we were walking away, I was like, never take a draw there. You were so winning. But
That's interesting. Okay, so you want to do some endgame work. Have you done any endgame study? Have you gone like through Silman's endgame course or?
I have the Voretsky Endgame manual.
Oh, okay.
That's been sitting on my shelf for like 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
I'm gonna give it a try, but
Wow, you're going
no,
deep, man.
mostly, honestly, most of my stuff, you know, if I can even call it studying, is just like YouTube. You know,
Okay.
Nereditsky, Ben Feingold. Those are definitely the big two, and then various other stuff. But yeah, mostly like anything. Nereditsky endgame videos are, I think, like the pinnacle of chess YouTube. He puts
Right.
his soul into those videos, and they're really good.
Okay, so have you gone through most of that series then?
Yeah, all of it. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, those are really good. I personally find that when you attach some sort of story to a position, it works really well. And Naroditsky described one of the endgame's positions as trousers. And ever since he said that, I was like, oh yeah, now I know how it works. Trousers. You just do
That's
trousers.
also ironically how I lost to the master. He trousered me at the very end.
Oh, and you knew it
Yeah.
was coming too. You're like, I've seen this. I watched Naroditsky's video. It's trousers.
I saw the pants coming, and I resigned.
Yep. Nice. Okay. So Naroditsky videos for end games for you. What about like puzzles? Do you do any puzzles, or do you consider your blitz work your tactics training? What do you do there?
Yeah, do some puzzles.
Okay.
I actually, my favorite type of puzzles, these aren't actually like helpful, but are you familiar with retrograde analysis puzzles?
I don't know, not by name.
So my favorite chess book ever, it hasn't helped me with chess at all, but it's The Chess Mysteries of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
It's not, and so the puzzles, I mean, there's like stories written alongside the puzzles, but it'll be like Sherlock and Watson will walk into a chess club, and they'll see like an abandoned board, and there's a bishop that's like halfway between two squares.
Oh, that's funny.
Oh, Watson, I bet you I deduce which square this bishop must be on, and it must be the dark square because of blah blah blah. And like, and it's all about like looking backwards in the positions and stuff. And a
Yeah.
lot of like, you know, it's White's move here. What was Black's last move? And a
Yeah.
lot of
Okay.
really tricky, fun
Cool.
stuff. So yeah, I'm a big fan of those type of puzzles.
Have you looked at cognitive chess by any chance?
Cognate is that book?
Yeah, it's a book. It's two things. The first thing is blindfold stuff where they just give you positions, you have to solve them. But then the second parts are what you're talking about, where it's like they give you a position and they say, like, how'd they get here? Like, what were the last eight moves that got us here? Or, you know, that kind of stuff. So
Yeah, that
I
sounds.
personally look at those puzzles and go, yeah, I'm gonna skip those. But it sounds like you are the audience for those puzzles.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I do like blindfold chess too. I can get through a game. I'm probably, you know, 500 or 600 points worse than I would be, but yeah, that can be a lot of fun. I don't think it actually really helps, like practically speaking, like with your chess. Like you definitely don't need to be able to do it, but it is fun. I worked at my old job. I would have anytime I would like. I was like the hiring manager, and anytime I would get a new person, I'd find out they play chess. I'd be like, "All right, I'm gonna play you blindfold." And just, I really think the secret to getting good at blindfold is play people that are really, really, really bad at first,
Okay.
because then you get your confidence up. Because yeah, trying to play someone that like is competent is
Yeah.
super hard. But
It's a
so play just
great
only play like.
equalizer for my daughter
Yeah, do you think you could beat your daughter blindfolded?
I. I cannot. She beats me every time. I can get through the whole game, but something always happens. And I feel like I'm about to win, and then I do not win. And it's she does she laughs a lot during our blindfold games. She
Nice.
very much enjoys them.
Yeah.
I enjoy them less.
Can you still beat her with your eyes open?
Yes, I can beat her without too much issue. She's about, I think she just crossed 500 now. She's, you
Okay.
know, about 1200 points lower rated than me. So I think my odds in those games are significant. But I
Yeah.
probably play like a 300 in blindfold, maybe 200, somewhere in there.
Okay, so you still got maybe like what, 3 years left to where you can still
Yeah.
be. That's not bad. Enjoy
Depends
it while
on her
I'm
commitment level, right? Maybe I can make her less committed and continue being better than her.
Yeah, you just gotta start discouraging her now. Like,
yeah,
you know,
exactly. You'll never
crash.
be anything. No, she's it was been interesting because she's been sort of stuck in like the 300-400 range for about a year, but she just something happened. She just had a breakthrough lately and she's just much better now. So
nice.
It's kind of cool to see. Okay. Any books you read, or are you pretty much a YouTube guy?
I'm a YouTube guy. I mean, I have a whole bookshelf full of chess books I've never probably gonna read, but
gotcha.
The only ones I ever read are the ones that like aren't helpful at all, like the Sherlock one, and there's a sequel to that, the Chess Mysteries of the Arabian Nights, which is like the same kind of concept of retrograde, but it's like there's like magic involved and stuff. It'd be like,
sounds fun. Do you keep buying new chess books despite knowing you won't read them?
Yes, because I also run the club, so
okay, gotcha.
Some point, someday, you know, I can dream about this, but you know, maybe someday we get our own like physical space. You know, like a coffee house, chess joint, and then we could have like our own like sort of library where people, you know, if you become like a member or whatever, you can check out books. So yeah, no, we'll go to like estate sales of, you know, people that have just like hundreds of chess books, and we'll just loot them and just build like a huge, you know, even if I know I'm never going to read half of it, we just
Do you loan them out at all now? Do you have like a spreadsheet that people can say like, hey, can you bring this one for me this week or anything like that?
We haven't really officially set it up yet. We got to get them all like kind of, right now they're at like five different people's houses and we got to like kind of unify it all, but yeah, I mean, we have a Discord for our chess club, which I would say if you're someone that's running a chess club or trying to start one or something, that is like the single best thing I ever did when it came to like promoting chess in Richmond, is making the Discord. Because for those that don't know, it's basically just like a big group chat for, you know, we got like 400 or 500 people in there right now. And, and it's really cool because you can have like different channels for like, you know, here's where you post a cool puzzle you saw, here's where you can post a cool game you just played, did something cool, or like, you know, pictures from our meetups, and then just like other stuff. We have like a channel for music. We have a channel for just like funny DMs that we get on Facebook from like weirdos, like someone like accusing us of being like pedophiles or something. They're like, they sent us like a few like really normal messages that were like, hey, when do you meet? Blah, blah, you know, okay, cool, yeah. And then they were like, just making sure you guys aren't like, you know, grooming children or anything. And I was like, what, dude? I was like, you know what? Don't come to our stuff.
If that's where your head's at, we're not interested.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And then I got to tell, this is probably the funniest thing that ever happened to our club. We had a guy that thinks that we were faking our games. So there was a video. I do tournaments in my backyard. And so we took a video, or someone took a video of me playing this teenager, and he started the video like it was already in the end game. Yeah. I was losing and then I lost, and like nothing interesting really happened. It was just a normal game.
Yeah.
And this guy was like, this game looks fake. And I tried to like, at first I took him seriously. I was like, what looks fake about this? Like there was anything spit. And he was like, yeah, you guys are memorizing your stuff. And then they just kept making new accounts. They've used like 10 different Facebook accounts. It's very obviously the same person.
Oh, wow.
And they just keep like commenting on all of our stuff, being like, our VIP fakes their games. They film people and try to make them memorize stuff. And I'm like,
what
first of all,
mean?
What do we gain from that? It makes no sense. But so, yeah. So for April Fool's, we're going to record a video of us like actually playing a fake game. Like it's going to be just me and Hannah, and it's just going to be the Opera game or something. And like,
trolling the poor person.
We've got big plans.
Big plans. Let me ask you then about running a club. I'm curious how this works. Like, first of all, how'd you get into it? It sounds like there was already someone running the club. Was there a coup that happened? Did they step down? How'd that work?
Yeah, I mean, so have you ever seen Game of Thrones or like House of
Oh, you.
Cards?
So you plotted it for a while.
I killed people. I straight
Wow.
up killed them. Yeah.
Oh,
No.
jeez.
I would say if anyone that wants to like get involved in their own, clubs, leadership positions type stuff, there's two steps. Step number one, and this is the most important thing, have really excellent attendance. Like I went to everything. I made it known that like I'm not going anywhere. You don't have to doubt like if
Yeah.
I'm just get bored with chess in a month and you'll never see me again. Because we've had so many people that are like, hey, this is such a cool thing that you're doing. I want to help out and do this. And I'm just like, yeah, I just met you. Talk to me in 3 months if you're still
Yeah.
here. And then
Right.
maybe. Because we've had so many people that, we would like bring them on to, oh, you want to be our club's photographer? Great, cool. And then they're gone in like a month. And it's like, all right, well, thanks. But yeah, so have really good attendance and then just make yourself useful, like in whatever way you can. I mean, every club needs a photographer, a treasurer,
Yeah.
someone to secure venues, like for whether it be tournaments or just like weekly bar meetups or whatever. And I would also really recommend something I see a lot of clubs doing that I think they shouldn't is there's two types of chess clubs. There's either places that only all they do is like rated stuff, at like a library or a coffee shop or somewhere, peace and quiet. Or there's clubs that do, bar, brewery type, stuff like that. And it's like do both. Like just do both. Like it's like every other club I can think of is like one or the other, but some people straight up don't like, going to bars and stuff, and some people also straight up don't like playing, in a dead quiet room and it's all serious and stuff. Like so yeah, so we try to do a little bit of everything. I mean, we're
That's cool.
and parks, on Saturdays that's like our kid friendly day, so we got, we're in a park or a museum or something, and then Monday nights we're at the metal bar with, listening to terrible Iron Maiden songs and
I think I would have to pass on that night. I don't think I can play chess with metal going on in the background.
it's you get used to it. That's I don't know.
I
Everything,
play chess.
yeah,
The
all the
nice thing
lights.
is, when you go to a tournament and the kid next to you is sniffling, you're going to be like, hey, man, I'm used to listening to metal, so that's fine. Sniffle away.
100%. No, I do not get distracted at all by anything in chess. I have kind of the opinion that people that raise their hand like all the time for the arbiters, I'm like, man, just chill out. Like, it's not that serious. Unless it's like something egregious. I'm not saying like everyone that does beanie. I'm just saying like I've seen there was this one guy that his opponent, like there was like a hair on the board and has like brushed it off the table, and he raised his hand and been like, he touched the board while my clock was going. I'm like, oh my God, dude. I'm like, if anything, it's more distracting me because I'm sitting right next to him. I'm like, if you could have just been a normal human. Anyway, rant over.
There's a lot of that goes on at chess tournaments. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're helping out at the chess club, and then something happens, and you're now running it.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of, yeah, I guess I never did really answer that. So yeah, it was all being run by this one guy, and I kind of offered to like start helping out. I organized our first ever tournament before we ever like formed as like an official LLC or anything. And then yeah, so we did the first tournament, then we had a meeting, and we were about to put together like a board of directors. And then COVID happened, and then we didn't see each other for like a year. But then once we got back rolling, yeah, we just established a board. It was like four or five of us. I wasn't the president then, but it was kind of like as like the younger guy, I was kind of just like thought to be like the next president eventually, whenever that happens. And yeah, and when the time came, the other guy stepped down and I inherited the club.
All right. So now you're running the club. It sounds like a fun club where you're trying to accomplish a lot. I like that idea of having some rated stuff, some park stuff, some bar nights, trying to do it all. It sounds like you guys meet a lot. It also sounds like you guys are really close from, just talking to Hannah and yourself and seeing your Twitter posts and stuff. It just seems like you guys are close-knit community, having a lot of fun.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's the community part of it is really like half of it, really. I mean, like, sure, we all try to encourage each other to, get better and learn and play in tournaments and compete. But at the end of the day, it's mostly about the, the friendships and stuff. And yeah, it's such a cool game where, I have friends that are like 60 years old and friends that are 9 years old. Like, it's so weird. Like, there's no other game where you can do that. And it's the kind of thing where you can just go to any city and just Google whatever their chess club is and instantly have at least a handful of friends. And yeah.
I guess the biggest question I have for someone who hasn't run a chess club is like, how do you just show up at a restaurant and take it over and start playing chess? Is that something where you contact them ahead of time, or are most places just cool with it?
There's a lot of trial and error. Some places we would have to like make reservations. Like if they have like a special like upstairs section, we would that or the metal bar we go to, we've just been going there for like 5 years at this point, and they know that every Monday there's going to be a bunch of chess boards, and it's usually dead on Mondays anyway, so it's fine. It's not like we're costing them business, but some places have kind of like kicked us out because they're just like, yeah, no, it's too, we don't want to look like nerds. So, because it's not like we're not buying stuff, we're we're buying drinks and
Right,
stuff,
you're paying patron.
but
Okay.
not everywhere is always cool with it. But once you find
Yeah.
the places that are cool with it and they got cheap drinks and they're open late, that's pretty much all we are looking for, because we do kind of go until like 1 or 2 a.m. most of the time.
Man, that's some going hard chess right there.
Yeah,
That's
gets real
well
slow.
after my bedtime.
Yeah, usually by 1 we're just like playing hand and brain and goofing off, but
Gotcha.
yeah.
Yeah, it sounds to me like if you're out there and you're looking to play, to make a chess club or something, and a restaurant kicks you out, don't be sad. Just try again at another place.
Yeah.
Okay.
Put it, make a poll, put it, make the Discord, make a poll, ask everybody. Hey, where do you want to try next? We've done a bunch of that.
Are you still coaching chess?
Yeah, not as much as I wish I was. I mean, I'm always happy to, get more students, but yeah, I've been coaching for about 10 years now. I mean, if you count the, so I've done, I did that study with VCU, and then I taught at a camp. I got to work for Maurice Ashley
Whoa.
for, yeah.
That's cool.
It was like he was teaching the fifth graders and I was teaching the third graders, and I got to play one game with him. I don't need to tell you how it went, but
You won. Wow.
yeah, easily.
Easily. Yeah, now that's a camp I'd want to send my kid to. Like, she'd come home and she'd be like, wow, this Maurice
Yeah.
Ashley guy is really fun.
For sure. No, he was inspirational as a teacher. But yeah, and I'm still teaching. I just had a lesson with some guy like last week, and a adult improver type. He's probably like 1,000 or so. Seemed pretty cool.
Do you feel like coaching helps you with your own chess as well, or is it more just that kind of community thing that you enjoy about chess?
I mean, I love hearing myself yap, so I would do it for free, like anyway. But I actually do teach for free. We would do like a once a week, we do like a lecture thing at the art museum, and I just like
That's cool.
I'll pull up the demo board that I got right there
Yeah,
behind,
see that.
show like a Morphe game or one of my games where I do something cool, and it's usually the audience will be like, I don't know, 12 to 15 people, half adults, half kids. But yeah, but no, but I also And to answer the first question, do I think it makes me better? Yeah, absolutely. Like, being able to teach something is way better than being able to just simply do something. Like, if you can teach it, that shows like a deeper level of understanding in it, and it forces you to, you know, articulate, you know, how to, yeah, it's very good to be able to do.
Okay, awesome. Do you have a coach by any chance?
No, I haven't had a coach since I was a kid. I probably, if I'm being honest, I probably wouldn't be able to afford one right now, but yeah. I could see maybe like a one-off lesson or something. Mm-hmm. It would be fun to do that. There's not a lot of coaches in my area that are like better than me. Like, most of the people that are better than me, they don't coach. So there's one grandmaster that lives in the area. He randomly came to the metal bar one time, and that was like Hannah Tech, like frantically, she's like, "Get your butt over here, the grand bar." And I was like, "What?" And
that's amazing. And,
yeah, and he was really cool. Sergey Ehrenberg.
He sounds good.
he's got a couple blitz wins on Magnus. So he's not just a grandmaster, he's like a good grandmaster. And my former student, this like 9-year-old, well, when I started with him, he was 9. Yeah. Now he's like 13 and he's straight up better than me. So I had to, because I had to tell his dad, I was like, "Look, this kid's too good. You need to get a better coach." Now he's working with the grandmaster. So it's just over for all of us. He's going to be the best player in Richmond. And like,
that's pretty cool though. They graduate from you to the grandmaster. You're like, "I'm basically a grandmaster."
Yeah. Well, he's my only graduate so far, but
nice.
So it was very mixed feelings, you know, when they told me like, "Oh yeah, we had to get another coach."
Yeah,
I was like proud, but also like disappointed that I wasn't better myself, because if that's actually my biggest motivation as a player, is I don't want to get better as a player just so I can beat people more. I want to get better as a player so that I can coach like better. Like, I want to be able to. Like, I couldn't justify teaching like a 1500 probably, but I wish I could.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Yep. I hear you. Did you do a big graduation ceremony for the kid? Give him a hat and everything?
No, but I mean, yeah, okay. I still see him all the time, and he's still cool. Yeah.
All right. Well, Spencer, this has been a fun chat. I got to think people are going to want to get in contact with you. You're an interesting guy. You run a chess club. People are going to want advice from you. What is the best place to get in contact with you?
I would say, well, I assume most of your listeners are probably on chess Twitter, so that would probably be the easiest thing to do. So, yeah, I am at Smith-Moron on Twitter. Yeah, I'll definitely retweet this whenever you throw it up there, and I'll DMs are open. Hit me up for just whatever it is. Yeah.
Okay. Sounds good. Thanks so much for coming on, Spencer. Good chat.
Absolutely.
For those of you out there, I hope this is the week where, you know, you get all the rating gains and all the points come flowing down like it's a FIDE Christmas in March. But if it's not, if it's a regular week, you know, come back next week. We'll have another guest for you. Some more advice. Take it easy, everyone. Goodbye.